listening to a leadership role, the first 90 days and beyond. That's not the session you intended to attend. Stick around anyway.
Good morning. We want to thank you all for coming. We also want to thank especially the online audience, including our friends at St. Lawrence University, your co-CIOs in the audience, so we hope you're paying close attention. To kick things off, I want to tell you a little bit about this group and how we got such a big group of people up on this stage. We're all graduates of the Frye Leadership Institute. We're the class of 2009. For those of you who aren't familiar with the Frye Leadership Institute, it's a collaborative institute between EDUCAUSE and CLEAR, which is the Council for Council of Library and Information Resources. Frye has recently been redesigned, but when we all attended, it was established to bring together up-and-coming IT and library leaders to develop our leadership skills and also to get us to think at a higher level about issues in higher education. Everyone on this panel since Frye has been promoted within their own institution or received a new higher level job at an outside institution. But we are not unique. Of the 47 members in our Frye class, about half of them had this leadership transition after going to Frye. So each of us is going to briefly introduce ourselves and tell you a little bit about our leadership transition. And to kick things off, I'll get it started. As Byron said, my name is Rachel Clemens, and I am the CIO at Menlo College. My career path to CIOship was a little bit non-traditional. I actually started in business development and marketing, and I worked in technology startup companies until 2004 when I landed myself in higher education. Immediately prior to coming to Frye, I was the director of IT relationship management and project services at Cal State East Bay, which is a mid-sized public institution and part of the California State University system. And when I went to Frye, I set a goal to become a CIO within 5 years, and I achieved that goal a little bit ahead of schedule. About 2 months after Frye, I was asked to take the CIO position at Menlo College, which is a small private institution. So. With that, I'll turn it over to Ellen.
Good morning. My name is Ellen Barkowski, and I am CIO at Union College in Schenectady, New York. I have traditionally been in higher ed. My first 3 years of my career were in industry as a programmer before I moved into academia. I have gone the traditional path of academic technology career path from starting with supporting faculty and then through moving up through different management and leadership responsibilities. I was director of academic support in the Office of Information Technology at the University of Maryland when I entered the Frye Institute. A little bit about a year after attending Frye, I received the opportunity to become CIO at Union. I went to Frye with the goal of understanding whether or not I wanted to be a CIO. I had that in mind already, but going to Frye helped to confirm for me that that was the next leadership step I wanted to take.
I'm Tom Dugas, so I took a little bit of a different route. I actually came from the public sector in 2004, and I had served as the IT director for a medical software company, a vice president for a startup company, IT director for a CPA IT unit, a whole bunch of things like that. In 2004, I came to Carnegie Mellon University as the desktop support program manager. And since coming to Carnegie Mellon, I have moved from there to the Assistant Director for User Services. And then, after attending Frye, I became the Associate Director for Global IT Services. Reporting to me are areas like the Help Desk, our Desktop Support Program, Communication Documentation, a number of special projects, Strategic Relations, In my current position, there are 5 direct managers and 18 staff members who report to them.
And I'm Lorraine Frost. I am the interim vice president and chief information officer for information resources and technology at California State University San Bernardino. I have actually been in computing for over 31 years at my institution, and I actually came up through the ranks starting as an analyst programmer. Prior to FRI, I was the director of administrative computing services. I also was the project manager for our PeopleSoft implementation, and I was an associate vice president for technology as well. This is actually my second time in the interim role. The first time I held the role for 2.5 years, and then they brought in a vice president. That vice president has since left, and now I'm back in the interim role. Unfortunately, there's no recruitment in process right now for the VP CIO role, so I have some high aspirations.
Hi, I'm Annette Marksberry. I'm Assistant Vice President for Information Resources at Xavier University in Cincinnati, Ohio. I came from corporate America, working mostly at General Electric, Citibank, Siemens, as various roles. Most recently was project management. I came to Xavier in 07 as a project manager, and as attending FRI, I was the director of the projects and planning area. Within 6 months of attending FRI, I was promoted to the executive director of a new area where project management and institutional research were combined into one new office, and since then have been promoted to the vice president, assistant vice president role.
Good morning. My name is Carlos Morales, and I am vice chancellor for academic affairs and distance education programs at Sistema Universitario Ana G. Mendez in Puerto Rico. I have been historically in higher education. Started as a faculty member teaching biology and microbiology courses, did a career change by pursuing instructional design and faculty development, and after that, I move up into an administrative role as director of academic technology and e-campus operations in an university here in Pennsylvania, and then the opportunity to lead a new operation, actually establishing a new 100% online institution came up, and this is what I'm doing right now. This happened after the FRI leadership experience, which certainly gave me a different vision if I wanted to be on a leadership role in higher education.
And I'm Marcia Schneering, the Associate Vice President for Scholarship Technology at Occidental College. I'm the lone librarian on the panel, but I will tell you that my path to my particular position reads like the dust jacket of an errant writer. I started out in retail bookselling, managed bookstores for years, went into early childhood education. From there, got into IT and spent over 11 years in IT doing end user support and training. Decided at one point that when my daughter went back to college, I wanted to go and become a librarian. Ended up in higher education. The same day that I was accepted to FRI, I was promoted to the director of our Center for Digital Learning and Research. And a year after FRI, was promoted to the Associate Vice President for Scholarship Technology, a brand new hybrid position that combines aspects of academic computing with those aspects from the library that involve instruction and research support. So we're quite an eclectic group, and I think you'll enjoy the conversation that we have set out for you today. We've divided this discussion across 4 major areas. The first one, we want to talk about positioning yourself for a leadership opportunity. And we framed this around the question, what experiences do you often reflect upon in your current leadership position, thinking about how you arise, got to this position. And we're going to start with comments from Tom Dugas.
Sure. So there's some really key things and experiences that stand out to me in terms of being able to position yourself for the next opportunity you're going to have. The very first thing is I have to say you have to be an eternal learner, which means that you continually have to be searching for new opportunities, looking for the next thing that you need to take on as a new educational thing. I found when I was walking into the conference center this afternoon or this morning, there was a big sign up from EDUCAUSE that talked about the opportunities available to folks, about the levels and where you are in your career, from entry level to mid level to senior level. And FRY is something that was surprising to me, was in the mid level of your career in terms of where you need to be, as well as the EDUCAUSE Institutes, the entry level or the opportunities here at EDUCAUSE. There's the entry level opportunities, the regional conferences actually are there as well. I thought that was really unique in terms of the fact that you can't ever stop looking for opportunities. You'll find that from my experiences, you know, I often go outside of where I need to be in the organization to look for educational opportunities, such as, although I oversee most of the frontline services, you often see me on projects such as enterprise desktop backup, looking for the enterprise service bus that we're going to consider, things like that that are really interesting to me personally, to try to learn new technologies. So I'm always looking for something that's a little outside of my realm of responsibility so I can meet new people, learn new things, and take on new challenges.
And Lorraine?
Well, certainly I followed a similar path, making sure that I was willing to accept any new role or opportunity. So that is rather key to make sure that you do stretch yourself. I also sought the professional developments that we talked about as far as through EDUCAUSE. I also did both internal as well as external. So if there were opportunities on campus, I volunteered. And also I went to the American Council of Education to look for other opportunities. I was just recently part of a women's leadership forum, which was just spectacular, and even HACU, so other professional organizations. I also became involved in our community as well through our Arrowhead United Way and look for leadership opportunities there. I also was identified by one of our senior executives as a potential candidate for vice presidency. So don't overlook your senior members as well in recognizing that potential. I also wanted to make sure that most people don't realize this, but as a college student, I had to take assertiveness training classes. And because I was rather quiet and shy, well, I don't have that problem anymore.
As I indicated, I've had kind of an eclectic path, and I would say the same thing is true in terms of positioning myself for a leadership role. I know that I'm very interested in being a disruptive force in the institutions and environments that I happen to be in. And consequently, I'm always looking for an opportunity to be a change leader. And what I did at Oxy really was just express that desire in multiple venues. I'm very fortunate to work in an organization that has a very visionary CIO, and that's, you can really see that if you look at some of the changes that have gone on in our institution. So part of it is acknowledging to yourself that you want and desire leadership, and then the second one is just making yourself available to that. So that's saying yes to the opportunities that come along. Like Tom, I really do believe that one of the things we sometimes have to do is move outside of the normal venue. So as a librarian, I would be inclined to go to lots of library conferences. Moving into other realms in higher education, looking at other conferences that may talk about the issues that affect us are important. But I also think even for all of us, particularly if you listen to the themes in the conference this week, stepping outside of higher education perhaps occasionally to get a different perspective on what leadership roles we need to adopt moving forward, because certainly there are big changes ahead of us. Okay, and we have we've kind of parsed this out with time, but I want to invite the other folks that weren't set aside to talk on this topic if they want to throw any other comments in.
Could I just add that my recollection at FRY is every single one of us put that troublemaker sticker on our ID. So
that's absolutely true, and we've worn that badge proudly ever since. Okay, our next question is, How did you decide what types of position role you wanted? Did you decide to stay within your current content area or move to a new area? And did you look at where the position reported to in the organization? And we're going to hear first from Ellen down at the end of the table.
Okay, so as I mentioned, I was in a director role at Maryland before getting my CIO opportunity. Part of what I went through in terms of thought process while at Fry and after was, if I wanted to be CIO, where would I want to do that? Having been at Maryland for 15 years and watching my CIO there, or actually several CIOs there, I knew I didn't want to be at a large institution. Just for me personally, I love community. I love being able to interact with a lot of people, and Maryland was just too big for that. So I really looked for a smaller institution, and I ended up focusing on smaller private institutions in my job search. For me personally, my husband and I were looking to move to the northeast area of the country, so I only focused in those particular areas in terms of job search. Also, because of my own experience in working in academic technology, and because this was going to be my first CIO role, I made the decision that I wasn't looking for a CIO position that actually reported into the president or into the administrative or financial side of the institution. I wanted to find a position that actually reported into the provost, because that's where my own experience was, and my understanding and teaching and learning is very important to me, so I wanted to make sure my responsibilities included that focus. So that's how I ended up deciding, you know, what type of institution and where I was going to apply. In terms of fit, that really came only after I started interview processes and when I was actually on campuses talking to people, seeing who they were, understanding the leadership style of the person I would be reporting to were all factors I used in terms of deciding which position I was going to take.
That last comment that Ellen made, I think, is really significant to recognize whatever our aspirations, there's the reality of the place that we go to, and then we have to weigh what we're looking for against what we find. Carlos?
Yes, in my particular case, I have been in higher education for close to 15 years, and half of that experience has been as a faculty member, but then, like I said before, I did a career change in terms of going into the technology part. My career started in Puerto Rico, and now I am back in Puerto Rico. I met these folks via Fry, but I was previously as an instructional designer in New Jersey City University, and positioned myself in a way that I wanted to do more faculty development, teaching and learning, developing faculty towards the acquisition of technology, and even when that is might be seen as a career change, I decided to stay in the academic side of the house, but with new responsibilities and new challenges to develop those. In my particular case, I took the challenge now of developing a new institution from the ground up. I am in charge of developing a 100% online university in Puerto Rico, part of a private system. We are four institutions, and the newest one actually is mine. I report to the chancellor. I am still in the academic affairs part, and similar to Ellen, I have been in. I ended now in a small kind of new institution, but before I was in mid-size institutions, because I felt comfortable with that level of close relationships, if you will, that you can develop with students and the other peers you have around.
And Ray's going to talk a little bit about this question as well. It's something she's been talking to us about this week, so she's going to share some of her very current thinking.
And some of my less current thinking. So I take a slightly different approach. I'm less concerned, I think, overall with whether it's a public institution, which I was at, private institution, which I'm now at, big, small. I think that plays a role. But one of the things that I think is really important to me in looking at leadership opportunities is the organizational development stage of the institution and of the IT department. And what I mean by that is, are you being asked to come in and take over for somebody who's done a great job and, you know, they just want somebody to kind of pass the torch to and just keep running the ball? Or are you being come in, you being asked to come in and shake things up because it needs some transformation? Are you being asked to come in to fix things? And how do you align to that? So you can be the best leader in the world, but if you are a very, you know, big strategic thinker and you are being asked to come in to run a very, you know, sort of operational, keep the lights on type of organization, you're not going to succeed, in my opinion, in that organization. So CIO Magazine about 2 years ago put out this model. They said there are three types of CIOs. There's the strategic CIO, the transformative CIO, and the operational CIO. And their argument wasn't that one type was better than the other, simply that we are different types of leaders, and different organizations at different stages need a different type of leader. So you might be fabulous in your organization right here, right now, being a, you know, transformative CIO, but in 3 or 4 or 5 years, the organization might need an operational CIO, it might need a strategic CIO. And while we all have, I think, or we all work to develop those aspects of our personalities, you know, fundamentally, we're sort of, you know, like Marcia. Marcia's a change agent. We know she's a change agent. She knows she's a change agent. So she's not going to do well in an environment where that's not really what they're looking for. So I think that's really important, is understanding who you are. I'm a fixer. I'm a change agent as well. I'm definitely a troublemaker. I'm okay with being a troublemaker, but ask me to sit in a room and do the same thing day after day after day is not going to work really well for me. And then the other thing that I think is really important in looking for fits is ask friends and colleagues and peers. As Marcia said, I've done that a lot this week, trying to figure out my path from here. And sometimes they see something different in you than you see in yourself and can provide insight into that, and also can say, oh, you know, I know this great opportunity and you'd be perfect for it. So I think that that's a great resource when looking at leadership opportunities as well.
I can't emphasize enough, Ray's last comment, that the importance of having a network of people that you can check in with, who know you, who can query you and question you and help you confront things that you may not want to do. And that's probably the reason that all seven of us are up here on this stage, because we do that regularly with each other. So you've made the decision that you want to be a leader. You've started investigating opportunities, and now you've snared that position. We've all seen the books, the commentary. The first 90 days are critical, or so we're told, in establishing that leadership transition and our role in that new institution, or the old institution with a new name. So I want to talk a little bit about what were the strategies that you might have put in place thinking about your first 90 days, what worked, what didn't work, as you reflect on that. And we're going to begin with Lorraine.
Well, I'm in a rather unique situation because I've actually been at my institution for 31 years. So as I began my second stint as an interim, I decided to take a much different perspective. The first time I was the steady state, keep the ship going straight. This time when the president asked me to take on the interim position again, I outright told him that I am not going to be steady state. I plan to do what I think needs to be done. And he was very open to that, so I was very thankful for that. So even though I had been there at the institution, I took the same route that most everyone normally takes their first 90 days. I met initially with all the staff. I set the tone for the vision of what I thought computer technology should be on the campus. I met with each one of the departments and found out exactly what their roles were, so I had a better understanding of the whole. Even though I had actually been there all that time, I wanted to make sure that they knew it was not going to be the same thing. I also made sure that I was scheduling meetings with all of my colleagues, my vice presidents, to make sure that they know that I'm there to support their needs. And I also did not treat my decisions or my position as an interim. I actually made the decisions for the right reason. I also tried to bring closure, because as being an internal person, you know, sometimes you carry a lot of baggage. So I tried to bring closure to any of those outstanding rifts or obstacles. And the other thing I did is, once again, reach out to all the deans. And we've been having quite a bit of turnover in our deans. So it gave them an opportunity, some of the new deans, to know who I was. And also for me, once again, to meet with those deans who knew my history and hopefully bring closure to those. The other item I did was, there's always room for improvement for communication. So once again, I stress the transparency and the need to improve our communications with our constituency. And my theme was, move forward, never look back. Just like Rafiki, you can't change it, but you can certainly learn from it. And I especially liked the EDUCAUSE quote that I kept walking by throughout the entire session. It's not about speaking and listening. It's about engagement and action.
Thanks, Lorraine. Carlos?
Yes, in my particular case, prior to my current role, I always conducted need analysis of what the stakeholders needed in order for the project to move forward, prior as an instructional designer and then as an executive director of academic technology, looking to see harmonize the strategic plan of the organization with the particular needs of those stakeholders. Communication, needs assessment, meeting with the deans, with the faculty, back then with the vice presidents, to make sure that we were talking the same language from paper and also from in action, if you will. In this new role that I have, because I am building from scratch, then I am just capitalizing on those strategies that I have developed to mentor part of my team and ask them to seek that information and seek that type of strategy, if you will. One big opportunity that I have identified in all my roles is that I have been tasked with building from scratch and creating from scratch. And certainly that is a large window of opportunity for anybody to exploit because there's no point of reference. As they say, and certainly anything that you do, as long as you fulfill the overall mission, I think will be allowed. Mentoring is also key. In my two previous roles, I have received a direct mentorship from key people, and that certainly has helped me grow within those roles. And now in this particular role, again, I am just applying what I learned and what I was advised to do, if you will. Make sure that either if you are in the process of creating or building a staff, make sure that you capitalize on the strengths of those staff members and that they complement on the qualities and attributes of each other.
Thanks, Carlos. So among the others that didn't talk, how critical were the first 90 days? Tom?
So I'd have to say that the first 90 days are really critical in terms of gaining some of the initial respect from your staff. I think Lorraine talked about it a little bit where, you know, she went and interviewed the staff, although, you know, it was kind of the second stint, but and also went and talked to the deans. I think you need to go and understand what people are feeling about the position and the opportunity that's there, where they actually feel they fit into it. They like where things are, they not like where things are. It gives you an understanding of what the level of change they might be acceptable for, you know, because certainly if things are not going well, they're looking for you to come in and make some changes. If things are going great, they're afraid you're going to come in and make too many changes. So those first 90 days are really critical to understand, you know, the extent to which you have to approach the position. So it's really important for you to go and meet as many people, talk to as many people, and get a feel for the lay of the land before you make any decisions. Oftentimes, leaders have the preconception they have to walk in and everything has to change immediately, and that's not always the case. And sometimes if you do that too soon, it could ruin your credibility for the rest of your career at that organization.
Annette, critical or not?
Yeah, I agree with Tom. I think the first 90 days are critical, and to talk to your staff and the others, and really back to Ray's comment of kind of understanding where the organization is, I think is critical, and whether it is in need of a change or if it is, as Tom was saying, a very stable organization and is afraid that if you come in and make a lot of changes, it's going to become unstable. And really assessing that, and I think there's a couple of philosophies. Some people say don't make any change the first 90 days so that you can gain that trust and really not knock the apple cart over. But I think also a lot of cases when talking with staff, and if there's things that they really have been wanting to happen and you can see it as a real positive for the organization, helping them get that done quickly, I think a lot of times does help you gain the trust of your staff and others around you so that they can see that you're there for a positive and that you're going to move the organization forward.
Ellen, was it critical for you?
It was very critical, and I think, you know, what's been alluded to is the communication piece, being able to communicate not only to your staff but to the campus community. In my case, it was clear coming in the administrative side of the house was unhappy. I spent a lot of time listening to the VPs and really took a strategy that I'd learned actually from doing organizational development work at Maryland, was to go around and interview everyone, look through my notes, and basically came up with the kind of overarching themes that were coming from everyone and used those to kind of guide my strategies afterwards in terms of what I focused on. But open communication and the right way is the challenge, too. I heard a lot about we get too much email, but, you know, but email's the easiest way to get information out. So, you know, that challenge of how to get the information out, in this case to the VPs, so they knew they were heard and what I was doing about it. And keeping them up to date with that. Union's small enough that I can go and just chat with them, although I did send them email messages so that all of them got the same consistent message in terms of my status and what I was working on.
Ray, how critical?
I think it's really critical. I also think, I mean, I agree 100% that you have to talk to everybody, as many people as you can, as quickly as you can. But depending on what you're there to do, there might be some other tactics you'd use as well. And the one that I would strongly suggest if you're there to fix things or dramatically change things is to establish benchmarks as quickly as possible, because you'll never regain that the first, you know, 30, 60, 90 days. You'll never... Hopefully you'll never be back at that state, so you want to benchmark it as quickly as possible so that when you are showing proof of, you know, asked to show, well, how have you transformed, how have you fixed, how have you changed, that you have something to say, when I got here, this is the state that we were in, and here's where we are now. So I think that's really important.
I think the only thing I'll add to that on the communication front, in my case, in both of the recent positions that I assume they hadn't existed before. So that first 90 days and beyond was trying to figure out what the job really was. And part of that was rehearsing over and over again by talking to people what it was that we were trying to do, where we were headed. The more it was talked about, the more clear it became the direction we were moving in. So that out loud brainstorming in process, you know, building the bridge as you walk on it, was really the case for me. But the communication piece was central to that. Okay? Lastly, everybody makes mistakes. As much as we wish that hadn't happened, it does. Looking back through that transition to the new leadership role, we want to ask the question, what would you do differently if you had it to do all over again? And we're going to start with Annette.
I think the first thing that I would do differently if I had to do it all over again is to realize that we do all make mistakes, and to give myself permission that I'm going to make mistakes, big or small, however big they are, however little, however they impact the organization, I'm going to make mistakes. So to give yourself that permission that it's okay. But then to go forward, I think a lot with what Ray was saying, those benchmarks that you do during those 90 days, to take those, to look at other organizations, know from your mentors, your leaders that you've worked with, someone you know, saw as a really great leader in the past, how did they move forward and how did they avoid the mistakes? And I think one of my big things is act as if you are in the role and doing what you see is needed to be done. And by following that, using, of course, benchmarks from across the organization and across like organizations to really try to establish your new group as much as you can. And I think, again, the communication is probably one of the absolute most critical things you can do. And like Ellen said, it really depends on who you're communicating to and how they like it. I did a lot of walking around and personal, just a meeting with people, and even if it's just a drop-in and saying hello and how are you going and remembering things about the people and what they're doing and reinforcing to them their importance to the organization and helping the organization move forward, I think is really an important piece that you have to kind of establish immediately.
Ellen, do you want to go public with any mistakes, or you just want to talk in broad terms?
I need to figure out if my staff are here first.
They could be watching.
No, I don't think there are any major mistakes I felt that I went through. I think it was more of, as I'm someone who self-reflects a lot, so you know, at the end of the day, I kind of think through what happened, what would I do differently, what do I need to do differently. I think the main thing for me I discovered actually through some conversations with my directors was, having come from Maryland and having been there for 15 years, you know, I had a good established relationship with my managers there. And, you know, I didn't have to say a lot for them to know what needed to be done. But then I was walking into a new situation with new leadership, really great staff, but having to remember that I actually had to be a little more explicit about expectations when we talk about different projects we needed to work on, because of the leadership style of the prior CIO who had been there. I am much more collaborative in my style than the prior leadership had been. And so, you know, the first time that one of the directors came and said, well, so did you assign that to her or to me to do? And in my head, I'm thinking, well, we're all doing it together. But for them, I had to actually remember that I need to be explicit about, I want you two to work together on this. I'm not expecting so-and-so to do it. So it was just kind of remembering that, because I had gotten in the mode in my previous job of kind of having that synergy. And so just kind of remembering that was one thing that hit me in some conversations probably 2 months into the job.
One of the things that I discovered is that I was way too hard on myself those first 90 days. I had great expectations in terms of where I would be at the end of those 90 days. And I had to give myself permission, especially with a brand new organization, to recognize that that wasn't going to happen for a long time. And having said that I thought communication was really important, the other thing I would say right today is I think I should have listened more and talked less. Because as I reflect on some of the bumps in the road, some of that came from not listening enough to what folks had to say. Ray?
Where do I start? There's so many mistakes that you make, but I think, like all of us on the panel, I think being overly hard on yourself is, you know, we have very high expectations. We're all driven to do these types of positions. And so I think in my case, the organization that I stepped into, I came from a 14,000, you know, FTE organization public to under 700 FTE private. And so I had these expectations that we could tackle. I mean, there were numerous challenges that we had to face, and I sort of wanted them all done at once because that's what you do. You come in and you see all these opportunities to make things better, and you want to make them all better immediately. And that's just not possible in many cases, in most cases, and especially not when you're walking into such a small institution with a limited set of resources. So I think, you know, if I had to do it back, I probably would have caused myself a lot less stress and some of my team a lot less stress if we'd taken a little bit more of a, you know, a stepped approach to some things. But there were so many, you know, I walked into an organization that had, IT was pretty much universally hated, and I'm not understating that. And so, you know, there were just so many things, and a lot of them little things that we could do and tried to do to change that perception quickly. But, you know, it's always, you never can do enough quick enough, I think.
So we are right on time, and what we wanted to do is make certain that we left ample opportunity for you to ask questions. As you can see, we're very candid about our own experience, and part of the reasons that we suggested doing this session at the close of the EDUCAUSE conference was that we wanted to help any people that are going out there who have aspirations to move in their position or in their institution with a little last-minute dose of support from us. So we would welcome at this time any questions specific to the four topics that we talked about, or just anything that you want to kind of throw out there about leadership. And do we have anything from our online audience at all?
Can you hear me?
Yes.
Yes. Okay.
So Scott from Augsburg wants to say hello to his colleagues, but he doesn't have a question.
Hi, Scott.
Well, I'd like to just make one comment. And as you move up in ranks, the one thing that has really been brought to my attention is that when you get to the executive level, it's no longer about you and your career. It's about the institution and its mission, and that's really key.
Oh, good. A question. Don't forget to tell us who you are and where you're at, if you want to, unless you want to maintain anonymity.
My name is Gary Browning, and I'm with Indiana University, South Bend. And the question I have here, actually it's a question for my colleague, is what is the best way to select and approach a mentor?
I'll start on that because I feel like I've had a ton of people who in my career who have mentored me, and I don't think that any of them I've necessarily looked at and said, would you be my mentor? I think it is so critically important. Every person that I have a conversation with in environments like these, our VPs, president, I'm learning something, and I try to make sure that I'm learning something from that. My former boss, my former CIO, I actually just saw him at this conference, and we had a 20-minute conversation, and I felt like I had just gained so much knowledge from that conversation. And he was a great mentor to me, but I don't think that at any point, you know, we ever said, I'm the mentee or the mentor. I just took that approach with him. He was willing to give me knowledge and advice and suggestions and to sort of, continue to promote my career, and I was willing to accept that. So I don't think it always needs to be an established mentor-mentee relationship to have mentors.
Carlos, you talked about the importance of mentoring, and we'll come to Annette next.
I just want to say I agree with Ray completely, and a lot of times I would say one of my big mentors right now is actually a colleague that I work with, and I think we mentor each other because we challenge each other, and we just call each other out on it, and it's a very free-flowing, and it's because we know it's helping us grow to be stronger leaders that we do it. So I agree. I don't think you have to necessarily define it as a mentee-mentor relationship.
At times, it is important to communicate your desire and goal to move into a leadership position, because at that time, it might trigger that relationship with a mentor that might be your boss. Okay, and in my particular case, my former provost, the moment I started talking about leadership roles and things, he offered to be a mentor, and he also offered other options and strategies that I could follow as that.
So I wanted to add one last thing. You can have several mentors at a time, and they all can be doing something different. The thing that I would recommend is just go up and ask them, you know, and sometimes you'd be surprised the response you get. Sometimes they'll say, are you sure you want to do this, or are you sure you want me, you know, and you have to make sure they understand why you're asking them to be a mentor, what value you think they can actually give you, and where you actually get some direction. I've been very fortunate enough to have at least several in my career, and they've all coached me at different stages where I think I was. And I blatantly, you know, either didn't tell them I was needed them for mentorship, or I asked them the questions I felt that they were mentoring me without actually doing so, formalizing it.
So I've had both. I've had, believe it or not, the first manager I had in industry I still keep in touch with, and he's been able to give me a perspective outside of higher ed in terms of leadership and questions I had myself. But I also did seek out a mentor because having a lot of male supervisors in my career, I was looking for a female that I could bounce ideas off of, and had heard someone speak at the Mid-Atlantic Regional about mentoring, and it was a woman that I actually knew pretty well at Georgetown. So after that session, I did go up to her and ask her if she would be my mentor, and she's been great. I've actually, you know, Skyped with her a couple times already while I've been at Union to get ideas and just bounce things off of her in terms of my own reactions to things.
Okay, we have another question.
Yeah. Kathy Fernandez, California State University, Chico.
fun to see friendly faces in front. Of course, there are lots of good interview preparation and techniques, but knowing that when you're interviewing for a higher leadership position in the institution, any recommendations or suggestions based on how you manage your interview, good ideas or suggestions, even perhaps if you have now been on interview committees, again, interviewing higher up in the organization, good approaches?
I'm going to jump in and just say one thing. I am endlessly surprised at people who fail to prep in terms of knowing about the institution, the structure, and with all the available information, that's like a red flag almost immediately. So make certain you've done your homework, and in fact, if you can ahead of time, contact some people that you want to make, you want some further information in order to be conversant with the institution as you come to it.
And as I mentioned, the American Council of Education has some excellent professional development opportunities to actually coach you on those interviews. And I must admit, I went through the women's leadership, and it was fabulous. I came away with much different perspective. As I meant, it's not about you anymore. It's about the institution, and everything you do to prepare for that interview has to be about the institution.
And I want to emphasize something else with that. So if you've come up one particular silo in the organization on the academic technology, the infrastructure side, security, and you're at that cusp where you're at a director level and you're ready to go to the next level, that's where I was kind of getting to, where you need to go outside of that area. So if you're a security director, you better go start working on an academic technology project somehow to get that understanding, because when you go to those interviews, those senior-level interviews, they're going to ask you about what you know about academic technology. You better say, well, I assisted with, or I was a participant in a project, and here's how I contributed. Because in the end, it's all about your contributions, about what you've done in the past, about how you prepared yourself for it. And if you don't know how to get in on those teams to contribute, go ask somebody in your organization and start to volunteer. There's no shortage of work in higher education. No one's ever told me, no, I can't volunteer for a project. In fact, I often get criticized for taking on far too many projects at one time rather than, you know, not enough.
And for me, it's if you can't get on those projects, you understand how to map your own experience. I have no administrative computing experience, but I've had to deal with deploying an enterprise-wide learning management system. So I mapped my experience of having to do that at College Park to what it would evolve in doing the same thing on the administrative side, because they're not really that different. So knowing that, and I would say the other thing for me personally, having done several interviews before I got the union position, was really being confident about myself, what I knew, what I could do, and that it was really whether it was going to be a right fit and the institution wanted me for me. And, you know, don't try to be who you think they want you to be, you just need to be yourself.
I want to underscore that when I first went to Oxy, one of the things I told the folks the first day I was there was, you know yourselves, I don't, and so what I really need you to tell me is, do I fit in the organization?
Yep.
Next question.
Keith Newfield, Wichita State University. Myers-Briggs teaches us that extroversion versus introversion is not about whether you're vivacious or comfortable in front of a crowd, but about whether working with groups of people energizes you or consumes your energy. If any of you rate as introverts, how do you manage your personal energy versus your leadership role?
That's a great question.
I'm an introvert. Is anybody on this panel an introvert besides me?
Nope. I think I grew into an extrovert.
I don't think anybody who knows me would actually believe that I rate as an I on the Myers-Briggs scale, but I do. I don't know. Privately, I like to be quiet. I like to just sit and think and read, but there's something about being amongst I think I'm just so passionate about what I do and about engaging people with technology and how transformative technology can be, that I love that experience. But it's not that I want to go to a party and, you know, and be amongst a million people. I'd much rather just sort of sit quietly and read. But being in this environment and talking and learning from people and engaging with people is it's just something I love. And so that's, I mean, like I said, nobody I know would believe that I'm an I, but I am.
One thing I want to add, I've heard, you know, I work with a lot of introverted people, and it's really about your value system. If you could do the work that you're enjoying doing, and oftentimes you have to prepare more to be the extroverted person where possible or necessary, But if it's the work you're contributing, the love, you'll find a way to overcome some of them hurdles, get some coaching and training to kind of get up there and do some public speaking. But if behind the scenes you're really engulfed in the work that you love, I think it's going to work out.
Only thing I'd add to that is if you haven't had a chance to look into it, you might look at Gallup's StrengthsQuest. It's an alternative way of evaluating who you are, focused on your strengths, and I found it really useful within the organization. Another question for us.
Richard Bazil, and I'm a dean of the Learning Resources at College of Central Florida. I just made it past my 90 days.
Congratulations!
I have two comments. One is about mentor-mentee relationships, that it's a two-way system. I remember early on coming up to several people and asking them to be mentors, and they all agreed. Mm-hmm. But then I would never hear from them. And I later found out that it was on the mentee to kind of draw that person in to ask them for meetings. You know, it's a two-way situation. And, you know, no one really explained that to me. So, you know, I would not hear from them. I was like, I guess they didn't like me. They just said it just to be, you know, nice. So that's important to know. The second thing is, you know, when I first started 3 months ago, I kept hearing this, you know, we got to get you past the 90 days. We got to get you past the 90 days. And I didn't realize what that really meant. And so I appreciate what you guys came up with, you know, benchmarking, setting standards, seeing where you are from where you started. I think those are great slides, and I want to get them.
I think they're fantastic. You got them.
The one thing I'll add to that is, you know, you're going to make mistakes. I think you need to admit them, you need to accept them, and you need to learn from them continuously. And then, as long as you're willing to do that in the first 90 days and beyond, you're going to be okay.
I agree with Tom, because I think just owning that and saying to whoever, whether it's your folks or peers or deans, whoever, yeah, I made a mistake, I think it can speak volumes about you and that you're willing to take that ownership and then just put it behind you and move forward.
And just remember, setting expectations for mentoree, you can also be a mentor to someone else, and that may also give you that opportunity to understand what it is that you're doing.
We're out of time, I believe.
We have an online.
We have an online, too.
Okay, we have an online question.
And we'll try to get to both of them quick.
Okay.
Yes.
We'll stay there. We'll get them both. Go ahead, Lyra.
Okay, so we have someone, Melissa Fortson, would like to know, administrators often have to convey messages, enforce policies with which they may not agree. How does a new leader convey these messages without resorting to admin speak? That's the first one.
So I'll answer, see if I can get this quickly. Empathy. You need to say that you're in it with them. So when you're, you know, pushing policies that are things that may impact somebody in a way that they're not really pleased about, you need to sympathize with them and put yourself in their shoes and make them understand you're with them on this, and we'll get through it together.
Go ahead.
Mine is related. I just wanted some clarification about the term disruptive, and because it seems like there's a fine line, and especially within, if you're looking to advance within your organization, I'm just a little bit perplexed about being labeled as someone who identifies as being disruptive. But that's appreciated.
So being obnoxious doesn't qualify as being disruptive. But being willing to ask the questions or to challenge the thinking that no one else will.
And also being very productive in that troublemaking.
Yeah, looking for solutions, but I really do think a lot of that is being willing to talk about the elephant in the room, whatever size it happens to be, and from a positive standpoint. So that means, you know, no whining, no complaining, but we have an issue. Where are we going with this? Or we've always acted this way. How can we come at this from a slightly different perspective?
There's one more online.
And be a risk taker, because, you know, at times there is something on the table that is pending to be acted upon, and, you know, because of being afraid, nobody wants to do it. So the disruptive is to take action and do it to see how, you know, it results or live with.
And just to add to Marcia's challenging, I think being challenging in a positive way and challenge, but have a solution, an alternative solution that you're challenging because this may be a better option.
Lita, one more.
Okay, so the last question from Tracy Adkins is, some mentioned more of an I approach, and others seem to have more of a collaborative approach. When you have a vision for change, how do you effectively implement your vision, yet employ collaboration and input so that the changes do not seem more about you, but more about the betterment of the organization? And did you worry at the same time that you were doing this, that change about, you know, are you appearing obnoxious versus tenacious?
Great question. Ellen, you want to take it on?
I'm not about I, so that was a hard one. I did reorganize in July, but it was an open discussion with the staff. They knew from the very beginning it was happening, and I actually welcomed all of them to come to me and give me their ideas about what they thought the organization should look like and why, so that I had actually all of their input because they were there. They were doing the work. They know kind of what works and what doesn't within the organization. So it was an open process for the staff. So I don't think any of them were surprised when they saw the new org chart in July. The reason I did that was a process that they did actually at Maryland that I appreciated being the staff member, having input into the reorganization. So I wanted that opportunity for my staff when I got to Union.
One of the characteristics in StrengthsQuest that comes out is being a wooer, winning others over. I have a very strong woo component. I also have a lot of vision. So part of that is translating that into the wooing aspect and trying to create that collaboration that Ellen's talking about.
And I also don't think, it's very difficult for me to say I. Whenever I'm discussing anything in a group, it's always we.
Well, we could go on, obviously. You've got our email addresses. Please feel free to continue the conversation. We've had a little bit of discussion about maybe we ought to open a Google site for anybody that wants to talk to us in mass about leadership. And if there's a show of hands about whether or not we should do that, we'll... Okay.
Okay.
You got it.
Fantastic.
Thank you very much. Thank you.